paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:11 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's make it a Thursday now because we're getting closer to the weekend. The NCAA tournament begins in earnest today, and producer Bennett Wakenight will be, he's going to stay up this afternoon. No naps because the Loyola Ramblers are in action a little bit after 2. Even Wall Street likes that news. The Dow's up 204 points so far today. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. Dennis, welcome back.
Hi, Steve.
I feel like we haven't talked forever just because I've been gone or you've been gone.
Yeah, I was on with Amy last time.
How was that? Was it okay?
It was. She was fine.
Oh, good.
She wasn't you.
I know. So you wrote a story about flipping, and it's interesting to me about the homes that have been flipped, particularly in the South Side, I think in Bolingbrook, too.
Yeah, Bolingbrook was the one suburban area.
And what I took away from it was, well, you just tell me about it, and I'll tell you what struck me.
Okay. Approximately 42,000 homes flipped in the past 10 years. This is a group called ATOM, ATTOM, puts out data at the end of every year. They sent me some 2017, and I said, well, can we go back a little bit? And they gave me 10 years of data for over 300 zip codes in Chicago. So we were able to see where, aside from that 42,000 flips in the Chicago area, where the most were. And in the top five zip codes, there were, in each of those top five zip codes, over 500 homes flipped in the course of 10 years. These are places like Marquette Park, Chicago Lawn, Auburn, Gresham, Ashburn, West Pullman, and then the one outside the city was Bolingbrook.
And the numbers are such that they could actually, the experts say, be transformative.
Yeah,
they could transform these neighborhoods.
Well, one of the things that a couple of people mentioned that I thought was really interesting is you would not have in the past 10 years in these low to moderate income areas have had over 500 intact homeowners doing gut rehabs on their houses.
Right.
So while, of course, nobody's arguing that the foreclosure crisis was a good thing, the upside that results from a lot of people losing their homes is that a big corpus of houses in my neighborhood all gets sort of put on a better footing for the future.
Not to continue to try not to be callous,
yeah.
But it's almost like a prairie fire in some ways.
Oh, you know, that's a great, yeah, that's a really good analogy. I should have used it in the story.
You can do it in the reprint. Do it online. You'll be welcome to it. From that, though, to white flight, not in the city, but in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I was aware of.
Well, this Indiana University sociologist did a study. He was looking at 650 counties around America. He was just looking for suburban population change for a lot of reasons we could get into. But he was really trying to narrow it down to find out, are there losses of middle-class white populations in the suburbs when there are gains in ethnic populations, primarily Hispanic and Asian American. When you see those numbers grow, do you see the number of white households decline? And Cook County had about 24 census tracts, which is about 2% of Cook County, where when in the years 2000 to 2010, as the numbers of Hispanic and Asian American population grew, the number of white people in that census tract dropped. And he's not saying that it's necessarily racially motivated, but what he's saying is it's middle class movement. So you're not saying, oh, poor people have moved to
right,
my neighborhood.
Right, right.
And his concern is it used to be said that as non-white people moved up into the middle class, there would be less of a fear among white people living near people of other colors, other races, but this suggests that it's not the case. But
so
one good
so
thing
the idea
is Chicago wasn't at the top of the list. Chicago's actually pretty far down the
list. Oh, really? Nice.
Or Cook County, I should say, is pretty far down the list.
So I was going to say, so the idea that segregation was economic and not racial, but his numbers seem to say no.
He was basically trying to strip everything away except race and still found movement.
But so did the neighborhoods he looked at, he started with neighborhoods where there was an influx of Asian and Hispanic?
He started in neighborhoods where in 2000 there was a sizable white presence. So,
okay,
neighborhoods,
so he started with the white neighborhoods
first.
Yeah,
where there's a white majority. Okay. And he looked at what was your, let's say your share, the white population in your census tract was 60% in 2000. It had to go down by one quarter of its share. So it would have had to go down 15 percentage points from 60 to 45 to look like measurable loss. And at the same time, obviously, because we're looking at 100, if one goes down, the others have to go up.
Well, that's what I was wondering, yeah. Right. So L.A. led the way?
Los Angeles County had, so we had 24 census tracts. Los Angeles County had over 70. Los Angeles County has a larger population than Cook County, but still had far more places where middle class white flight seems to be happening suburban areas.
That's middle class, so maybe some lower end housing. You like to write about upper class too. Tell me about the former Trunk Club CEO and his new digs in Winnetka, we think.
I'm pretty confident. Brian Spaley, who built Trunk Club, which is a thing where essentially it was a men's wardrobe choosing sort of a service. Here's a box of clothes that comes to your house every month, and you send back what you're not going to wear, that sort of thing. It eventually got bought by Nordstrom. He built that company here in Chicago, and earlier this year bought a house for nearly $9 million in Winnetka.
Wow, they sold it, but I mean, they sold Trunk Club. They had a place in Lincoln Park.
Right.
They're selling that, and they bought the place in Winnetka.
Yeah.
Did you call them and see what they thought about that?
I did call them and see.
How'd that go?
I got hung up on.
What?
you really just wanted to talk about that.
I did.
Honestly, Steve, I get hung up on or I get... I mean, you know, I am invading people's privacy
right.
when I'm writing
about
these. No,
it's true. It's not something people often want to talk about.
Yeah, I often have, I mean, I can type with my eyes closed, did not respond to a request for comment because I have to call and ask,
right.
Oh, I see you bought this house. What do you think? And generally, people, not only when they buy for $8.8 million, but when they buy for $100,000, don't really want something published, so they don't talk to me.
Well, let me just say this. I have never hung up on you.
That's true.
I can't promise
but
I won't
haven't reported
ever.
On your home purchase.
Maybe in the future.
When you buy an $8.8 million house, I'm there.
I don't know who you are.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 1223. Steve Bertrand here, and Dennis Rodkin there. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. In the second half hour, we'll talk to Ian Schur from CNET.com, a senior editor there. One of the things I want to talk to Ian about, Dennis, is the increasing use of virtual reality to alleviate pain.
Oh, really?
Hospitals are using it instead of, you know, painkillers. Sometimes they find they're getting the same results with people going to quote-unquote la-la land virtual reality.
Really?
That
wow.
Sounds pretty cool.
I'll have to keep listening.
Speaking of la-la land, let's go to Lake Forest. What's going on there?
Your transitions are amazing. So the story I have out today from Lake Forest is noteworthy for a couple of reasons. A mansion formerly owned by Bill Wrigley Jr., who used to run the Wrigley Gum Company, is on the market for $8 million. That is less than he paid for it 15 years ago.
Wow.
Other sellers are selling. He sold it to them about 6 years ago in the $5 million range. So he sold it at a loss. But the point here is 15 years ago, he paid $9.9 million. Now it's on the market for 20% less. And that's something we're seeing. You and I have talked about, especially in Lake Forest, but on the North Shore, is these big... this one is a fabulous mansion with a 10-car garage underground and a swimming pool. There's a video in the story. You should watch it. This incredible swimming pool up on the lawn and then down to the beach. And it's a pretty amazing place. And we're seeing these priced at and selling at well below not just boom years prices, but 10, 15, and more years ago.
Well, we talked about this not too long ago, and Lake Forest has actually started a marketing campaign to try to get people up there.
Right.
And why aren't people going up there?
Well, I've heard a lot of things. I've written a couple of stories about this, about the concept, as well as about individual properties. And I hear a few things. One is young, wealthy people are more likely to stay in the city than to get a place way out in the suburbs.
You write about the mansions in the city, and they weren't there 15, 20 years
ago. Yeah.
I mean, the new ones, the new houses.
Yeah. Right. A generation ago, when you made it, you most likely moved to Lake Forest. Maybe Hinsdale, maybe a few other places. But when you really made it, you went to Lake Forest. And it's far away. Especially if you're a two-income couple, it's hard because, you know, the kids are playing soccer. You're both working down here. It's hard to get all the way up to Lake Forest to the soccer field in time is one of the things I'm hearing. And it's also just true that condo living is more appealing to the super affluent now, or appears to be more appealing to the super affluent now. So Lake Forest is sort of suffering. The other thing is, suffering may be too hard a word, but the other thing is that these are grand old houses that need a lot of maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And the taste at every price point now is for new construction.
People want new.
Yeah.
When we bought our house more than 20 years ago, I specifically wanted old. I wanted character, not something sterile and new.
Well, I think the thing that goes best in the city right now is an old house that's been completely gutted and redone inside.
And ours was a little bit.
Yeah, because then you don't have to do any work to it. But when you and I were younger buying houses, sweat equity was the idea. Buy it at a low price and work on the kitchen yourself. Replace the old wallpaper, that sort of thing. But and it used to be sort of the way to gain in the real estate market. But what I hear day after day after day now is that people want it done. They want to be able to arrive with the toothbrush and walk in and move in.
So does that mean people who are sitting in mansions, if they want to sell them, should be, I guess you shouldn't be concerned. If you're sitting in a mansion, you're going to be okay. Right. Oh, honey, our $10 million house is at risk.
Well, but, you know, one of the things you have to understand is that the people who bought this house or any of these mansions, they were investing in a piece of property, right? I mean, certainly they were investing at a far higher level than you and I were, but they thought it would appreciate.
I remember Mr. Wrigley caulked all the windows himself. He put that sweat equity into it.
Yeah, I think he was out there with a scraper scraping the old windowsills. Right,
so we'll go to chicagobusiness.com and see the video of that house, right, and others. Dennis Rodkin, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And let's jump right into the second half of the Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. On a phone line is Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET.com. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while either. We've been on different trips or vacations or things like that. Okay, I'm really excited about this story that you guys are running when it comes to painkillers, virtual reality as a painkiller. Sounds fascinating to me. I know it's not a perfect solution, but wow, there's some real possibilities here. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, you know, in the world that we live in where opioids are a concern and addictiveness to painkillers is a real issue, a lot of hospitals are starting to look at what are other alternatives. And, you know, virtual reality, this thing where you put goggles on your face and you kind of look a little goofy, has a lot of benefits, it seems. They've been testing it at a couple of children's hospitals, one in Stanford, which is just down the street from me. And what they found was that they actually help to distract children while they're going through painful procedures really well. So one kid has like gauze that needs to be, you know, dressing that needs to be changed. It's very painful for him. And so they created this game that you can't lose, right? So there's no end to the game, but it's distracting enough. They put it on his head, and we actually have a photo of it on our site at CNET. And he's playing the game while they're changing his dressings and no pain at all. And they tried the same thing with another kid at a different hospital where they this one has a real anxiety around needles.
Right.
And so they used to take like 8 people to help get a needle into him. Now, perfectly fine. Well, and so it's a really good sign that this stuff can have a benefit and not have to use drugs.
I mean, if you think of it, I'm sure kids have been in doctor's offices or parents with their kids where, you know, you'll be showing them a movie or a TV show hoping that would distract him. This is just all much more overwhelming is one word, I guess, or all-encompassing
immersive,
than that would be.
Immersive, I think.
Right.
Yes, exactly. And it's really powerful. And you know, look, I mean, I think that you're going to see much more of this because the cost of virtual reality is going down significantly. I mean, you can get a headset now. I mean, some of them are free, right? The really cheap ones that work with phones. But you can get a decent headset now for about $100. And so the opportunity to do really good things with that, you know, hospitals would way better prefer to do that
right.
than prescribe medicine or do anything else. So, you know, there's other stuff out there, too, by the way. PTSD research is now leaning heavily into virtual reality because they're finding that exposure therapy helps really well. The military actually goes to some of the locations where people get into firefights or are hurt really badly or there's a bomb or whatever. They take photos of it. They create a virtual reality experience, and they bring the veteran who's, you know, now in a hospital back to that place so that they can live through it and go through the exposure, and they're better because of it. And so there's a lot of really cool stuff that's being done there that I think could be really impactful.
Well, and that speaks to the development, software development, too. There, you have to have, if, again, we're talking about kids and games, you have to have specific games because a lot of the virtual reality games that kids might play end up with, you know, violence in one way or another, and that's not going to take your mind off the pain.
Right. Well, I mean, really anything could distract you, right? But actually the biggest concern that the doctors had and the reason they created special games for this is that a lot of games have an endpoint, right? Either your character dies or you miss the level, right? You don't finish. I mean, even Tetris has an endpoint, right, where you it suddenly all the blocks build up and you're done. And they can't have that in the middle of a procedure. So they created these games that don't really have an endpoint, but they're fun enough to play that the kids just keep playing and playing and playing while the procedure's happening.
Yeah, it'd be nice to win, but you don't want to win right before they rip the bandage off.
Exactly.
All right, so where are we on this then, and how big is the future?
You know, it's still in the research phases, right? I mean, part of the thing that, you know, the fact that we're talking about this as something remarkable and not normal is a sign that it's not really out there yet. But I think that because of the cost of this stuff going down, I think that the positive impacts that they're having very quickly here, I think you're going to see this stuff spread because you don't have to go to the FDA to get approval for it, right? It's just a headset. And so it's going to be, I think, something that's going to happen a lot quicker than a lot of you think. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the next time I need to go to the dentist, them slapping a headset on me so I don't have to think about that I'm in a dentist chair.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool idea. I like it a lot. So we'll follow that. Earlier this week, President Trump squashed a Qualcomm Broadcom deal. A chip deal would have been the biggest, I think, in the world. And you guys are writing, you know, this is all about 5G. And you and I have talked about 5G. So put that all together for me. Put that in some context.
Yeah, so the important thing to remember is, you know, this 5G thing, you may have heard of 3G and 4G, right? So this is more than just another G. It's supposed to revolutionize the way that we use technology because it allows for low-power cellular connections, so stuff like to your car or to your doorbell or whatever. And it's really, I mean, the tech industry is really excited about what this can do. So the important thing here is that the United States is actually leading, which is not always the case.
Right.
And this company, Qualcomm, which is in San Diego, is one of the leading 5G networking companies. So Broadcom, which is in Singapore, wanted to buy them for $117 billion. And President Trump blocked it because of national security concerns. And this is not the first time, by the way, that the Trump administration has started saying they're really interested in 5G. There was a story before about how the government's interested in building its own 5G network separate from the ones we use. And so it's an indication that for some reason, the government seems to be very focused on the future of wireless and keeping it secure. And they're convinced that if we allow a company outside the United States to take control of a company inside the United States that makes it, that it makes us less safe.
It's fascinating.
And that's really interesting. So
when the president slapped tariffs on countries, on steel and aluminum, he claimed national interest. Everyone's like, eh, right, okay, we get it. That's not true. But when it comes to this, you're making a compelling national interest argument for this.
Yes, and look, I'm not alone. There are a number of analysts out there, including ones we name in the story in CNET, that say that there is a security risk likely around this technology if we don't make sure that it's in the right hands and it's being developed correctly. You know, this is not the first time that we've heard about security concerns with networking either. You remember the government, even before Trump, came out against Chinese companies that were making networking equipment saying that it was unsafe. So this is a concern that government's had for quite a while.
All right, South by Southwest is getting underway in Texas. Michael Heidemann, in fact, former producer of the show, is there. We'll talk to him tomorrow. But Elon Musk has already made his appearance, and he's talking about the coming dark age.
So Elon Musk, right, he's the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX, billionaire, someone we all listen to, right? So he's been talking about the end of the world quite a lot recently. He talks about how artificial intelligence is dangerous. He talks about possible nuclear war. He's very negative. And so he spoke at South by Southwest, and he talked about all that stuff again. But then he said, what could be a solution? And one of the ones he thinks is that we need to establish a human colony on Mars with about 1 million people that can sustain the human race if we all kill ourselves here on Earth, which sounds a little crazy. But again, this is a billionaire, a very powerful man in business. So we're all listening.
Right. So he's either nutty or he's a genius. And who's going to bet against him?
Well, and, you know, if he's right, I'd like to be on Mars, right?
That's so, about the only thing that could get me there, Ian. I think that's it.
Exactly.
That's all right, that's Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET. Check out more of the stories there, and check out all the reviews of the equipment that they've got there as well. Yeah, I look forward to the next time we talk, Ian. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Take care.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. So it might not be springtime yet, but it will be soon, and Chicago's natural scenery will be blooming again with trees and flowers and fresh air. Let's hope. But one Chicago landscaping company is already flourishing. That's Landscape Hub, and they just finalized a $4.4 million funding round. It may sound kind of weird, but it's a B2B procurement business to streamline the landscaping industry. Think about it, though. Most of the plants you see around town were placed there by a landscaper. One thing for sure is that this Chicago company will be digging around for a while with that kind of cash. The Better Government Association is also digging up more transparency in Illinois politics, thanks to the leadership of new CEO and former investigative journalist David Griesing. The bipartisan watchdog organization is keeping local governments honest and driven towards integrity. With the world of business adapting to the demanding world of transparency, why shouldn't the political world be too? Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:54 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink is on the phone line. Elise Glink, of course, is the person behind thinklink.com, also bestmoneymoves.com, and you can check out more about her HR app, Best Money Moves, at bestmoneymoves.com. Elise, I want to ask you about that in a second. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Where are you anyway? You're not in Illinois?
I'm not today. I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, good for you.
Where it's beautiful, sunny, and a little cool.
Well, it's the same thing here. It's beautiful. It's sunny. It's a little cool. It might be a little cooler here. Okay, so it's too bad. I'm sorry you're not here, because I thought maybe after the show you and I could go shopping at Toys R Us and to buy some unnecessary plastic figurines and video games that we might never play again, because it's our last chance.
Yeah, it's interesting. Toys R Us, which filed for bankruptcy, I think people thought there would be a reorganization, and there just does not seem to be a next act in it. And so they've decided officially to shut down all of their stores nationwide.
Now, I was reading a statistic this week that 90% of retail is still in stores. People are still going to the shops for 90% of what they buy. So what did in Toys R Us? Was it online shopping, or was it other toy stores?
I think it's a little bit of each. You know, certainly Walmart is looking to boost its, and Target and Costco, they all sell toys. They sell toys at the bigger time of the year. But there are structural changes that have come to retail. And where malls are, you know, Toys R Us just wasn't able to cut it out there anymore. A lot of expenses. And so I believe what they're doing is thinking they're going to make a push online and just sell toys online, because that's, of course, how everybody has become accustomed to shopping.
Right.
And when you think about what else you're going to be able to buy online, and how drones are going to be delivering it, and how young people are all accustomed to doing everything online, it starts to make some sense.
You sent me a great story from the Washington Post about the origins of the company. The guy who started it started with a kids' furniture shop, and then learned really that the money was in return customers and toys. So it's a cool story. Real quick, we've got just a minute left, but you also sent me a note about the science of financial wellness and health outcomes. And I know that's something that you focus on when it comes to Best Money Moves. What is it you've uncovered?
Well, it's just interesting. I was asked to give an innovation speech in Las Vegas next month, and they asked me to look at the connection between financial stress and poor health and health outcomes. And it turns out that there's a growing body of research of true research studies. I think there's like 35 or 37 of them now, including a couple that came out last year that point to indebtedness. And so being in debt and worrying about paying for that can have very specific healthcare implications, like an increase in cardiovascular ill health, particularly for men. So when you're in debt and you're stressed about it, you're more likely to get a heart attack or have cardiovascular illnesses. And for men, being married, there's a little bit of a, you know, that helps a little. For women, there's no help. Like you're in debt, you are way stressed, you're going to get sick.
Wow. And that's the sort of stuff that Best Money Moves helps with, right? I didn't mean to turn this into a commercial, but good golly, that's what you do.
It is. I mean, I was looking at it simply because the whole question of how you identify financial stress, how you reduce it, has such a big payoff for employers. And we normally would think about that payoff as just having more engaged and happier people. But the truth is that many companies are now self-insuring their healthcare costs, which are so high. This is a way, we think, to hold it down. And it's exciting to see the research starting to show that's true.
Yep, I've got to finish my taxes on Saturday. I might need to take a sick day on Friday just because of the stress. Elise Glink, nice to talk to you today. We'll do it again soon.
You bet, Steve.